step aside. Let us do it. The Daintree power. You know, put Mr. Berwick, you know, he does have a lot of influence in the Douglas Shire still, and I think that is very, very damaging for the community. And, you know, he's a has-been. He hasn't been there for a long time. And he needs to step aside now. We've put the money up for the engineering and the shovel-ready project. It's going to be done in 6 months, and that gives us a couple of years then to send it out for expressions of interest and get the project started. The great thing about this one is that it will allow a third party, because this is not an Ergon project, not a state government, which is a state government instrumentality. They don't require get access. They don't need access to the state government-owned grid, TransLink. This is a standalone project, and I'm really excited not only to see this as the first hydrogen project, and I see Berwick and the Batman, Mr. Spencer, there giving their extensive engineering knowledge and scientific knowledge on hydrogen. You know, when neither of them can even build compliant, you know, council compliant dwellings in their own, you know, in their own areas.
Your reaction to that, Mike?
I'd like to avoid the acrimony and talk about the issue, if I might.
When somebody calls you a has-been, what do you think of that?
No, I'm not really interested in talking about that. I mean, that doesn't help us understand the issue, really, does it? That's just abuse between two people. And look, my congratulations to the Morrison government for their win. They did really well in Queensland. I think we need to understand the big picture here. This place is a global biodiversity hotspot. It's an international treasure. We need to just always remind ourselves of that. And the fact that we've been through this before. So back in the 90s, there was an attempt to put power on, and it triggered the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act. That's the National Environment Act, as this will again, because it goes through World Heritage Area. And what that study said was that before you put electricity on, you need to reduce the number of residents there, or the number of blocks available for development, by about 50%, because if the place is fully developed, you'll lose its biodiversity. And that's what this place is precious for. That's the foundation of its tourist attraction. And if they do this again, I guess that will happen again, and it'll probably say the same thing. The Daintree Future study said the same thing. So this is not a debate about renewable energy, though it would be lovely to have a better proportion of renewable energy in Daintree. This is not about how much diesel generators consume, which, by the way, is very small compared with the amount of traffic up here. Locals and tourists would be far greater than that.
Mike, can I just stop you there? You're saying that there's not much pollution from diesel, but there are figures that have been released that say there's millions of litres. I mean, even just a small operator using 700 litres a week of diesel. I mean, this is a lot of diesel going into a beautiful place.
Yeah, look, I understand that, and it would be nice to find alternatives to that. And there are businesses that have never invested in solar. The ones that have drastically reduced the amount of diesel. I just want to put the amount of diesel in perspective, because it's tiny compared with the amount of petrol and diesel that's spent in driving motor cars up and down here and the tourist traffic. But no one's suggesting we stop that. Of course, it would be nice to reduce the diesel, and we're all in favour of a better renewable power. And we think that a much more efficient system than a grid over a huge distance with big costs of establishment and maintenance is not cost effective. And if you look at rural areas all around Australia, the remote areas are all going off-grid onto standalones because they're more efficient. So it's very difficult to imagine that a grid is going to improve efficiency up here. And added to that, who's going to pay for it? So the Sunverge report said $65 million. That's probably about right, given that the 1998 study said $50 million. And now the cost has been added to, because we're looking at a very high-tech hydrogen system, and there's some questions about the efficiency of that as a storage system. Who's going to pay for that? The locals can't. There's only, according to Sunverge, 318 customers and 42 businesses. Is this going to be a subsidised system? And I hear Lawrence Mason saying us people are trying to keep the prices of land down by stopping electricity. Well, put it the other way around. why would you subsidise electricity into a biodiversity hotspot like this and promote development when you don't do that anywhere else in Queensland? There is no capital subsidy for anybody in Queensland to hook up to the grid. It's a cost recovery system. So I just think we need to understand all those things. And, of course, now Warren Entsch is going to have to deliver this. He's given $1 million to this local community group up here to do the study. It's going to come up with some numbers, and sure, you'll be able to put all that stuff in. But the cost is, I suspect, going to be a great deal more than $65 million. And it's going to have negative impacts on the biodiversity and the World Heritage values of this place. So that is our problem. Now, I think there are solutions to this. We're not anti-solutions, as we are portrayed. We think it would be far more cost-effective to help everybody improve their standalone systems. They are more efficient. That's why they're getting off them in remote areas, off the grid and onto standalone. Probably a mini-grid would work really nicely at Cape Tribulation, where everyone's close together, and it's where the concentration of businesses are. And it's fully developed, so it's not going to affect development. But in other parts of the area, the grid is not going to work. It's going to have a whole lot of perverse effects, and I doubt many people are going to want to hook up. So there are solutions, but simply looking at this one macro grid solution is all wrong. We need to look at all the solutions, and we're very open to that.
Talking with Mike Berwick, former mayor of the Douglas Shire Council and part of a sustainability group that really isn't all that keen on this hydrogen solar grid. Mike, this particular, now we've done so many studies into this, and I think somebody said around about 7 or 8 studies have been done this century and a couple done previously. When are we going to stop doing studies and have some action, one way or the other?
Well, this system actually does need some serious study to understand how much it's going to cost, where the hydrogen's going to come from. If you go back to the Sunverge report said a standalone gas-fired power station and a grid and sharing people's power. Now, nobody liked the gas-fired power station, but it would have worked. It made sense, and the cost was really high, and it looked a bit ridiculous. Because the gas-fired power station doesn't sound too good, it's now jumped to a hydrogen one. That's going to cost a great deal more. And the technology is very unproven. And the point that needs to be made about hydrogen, if you want to generate electricity locally with a solar farm or whatever, which is what's being talked about, and you want to store that electricity so you can distribute it at night or when the sun's not shining, hydrogen is a very inefficient way to do that. Hydrogen has its uses, and they're great. Good stuff. But making hydrogen out of power, which I guess would be either whether it's coal or sunlight or whatever, and then turning it back into electricity is about 40% efficient. Whereas a battery, if you make power either by coal or sunlight or whatever and store it in a battery and redistribute it, is 95% efficient. So if you're going to make power with a solar farm and store it and then redistribute it, use batteries, because that's what everybody else does because it's efficient. Hydrogen is also very difficult to transport. I don't think they've nailed that one yet. But as I understand, this is about a massive solar farm that has got enough surplus energy to make hydrogen can then supply the grid. Now, someone needs to unpack that and say, will that work? A lot of us have doubts. It is certainly not shovel-ready. It absolutely needs a lot more understanding. It's a completely new concept. And to say that we're sick of studies is ridiculous, because this is a whole new idea that needs proper assessment. And as I said, it will trigger the EPBC Act. And the EPBC Act in the past, commissioned by the Howard government, when the National Party government in Queensland wanted to put power on here, said, hold on, putting power in can probably be done underground without any direct impact, sure, but you're going to promote a whole lot of development. And if all of the land that is available for development up here is developed, you'll get 2 or 3 times the population you've got here. You'll lose the area's biodiversity and its scenic values. You'll probably have to put in a bridge then, because, you're going to have a lot more traffic, and it's already congested now for 6 weeks of the year, which is a hot issue. You'll probably have to put a bridge in just to cope with the traffic of visitors and locals alone. And then, of course, we've got the road upgrade. Well, that's an even bigger impact on the place. So there's some big issues up here, and to sweep them under the carpet and ignore them is nonsense. They have to be looked at.
Okay, we were talking about surveys. We're talking to Mike Berwick at the moment. Now, we were talking about surveys done. One is now being done, another one by the Department of Natural Resources, Mines and Energy. Now, you were at that meeting yesterday.
I was, and we've agreed at that meeting we're not going to talk out of school about it.
So it's all secret, is it?
Well, no, it's not secret. They're going to put out a newsletter. But I can say this about the process. They have a bunch of experts in there from the department and from outside and consultants who are going to look at all options. So I welcome that process because we're not opposed to looking at all options. We like the idea of looking at all options. But you have to consider all those things that I've just talked about, and they will be considered, and they have to be under Australian law.
Now, that meeting yesterday, I can tell the people it was the Department of Natural Resources, Mines and Energy, they called it. There was the Douglas Shire Council were represented, Wet Tropics Management Authority, the Googie-Allenji people were represented, the Daintree Renewable Energy Inc., Daintree Marketing Cooperative, the Douglas Shire Sustainability Group, which you are a member of and head up, Australian Energy Market Commission, and the Australian Renewable Energy Agency. Now, this is a lot of people and a lot of information. You can't tell us one thing that came out of the meeting yesterday?
No, I'm not prepared to. I could tell you lots that came out of the meeting yesterday.
Oh, tell us, Mike.
No, there's no way, because we agreed that people at that meeting needed to talk freely and not have one or two or more people go off to the media and either represent or misrepresent it. That was agreed by everyone at the meeting. And I'm going to respect that, so I'm not going to talk about that.
All right. But when will we know?
When will we know,
Mike, about that meeting and what was discussed?
Well, you'll have to ask them, because I'm only a visitor to that meeting like all the rest of them, and I'm not heading up DSSG. I am representing DSSG on this particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
The chair of DSSG, the president, is Didge McDonald, not me.
Yep. All right. Can I just ask you...
I can talk. What I think can be said about yesterday's meeting is they have assembled the necessary expertise to be able to evaluate all options, and I think that's a good thing. That is not what's happening with the Commonwealth money. That has been given to this little community group over here, the Daintree Renewable Energy Agency. They've been given $1 million, and they're going to do the study. Now, I guess it's stupid that we've got two studies going on, and really the two parties should get together and have a look at them. But as I understand this state-run process, they are going to look at that and all the others, and that's great.
Okay. Look, and just before you go, I'd like to just tackle a couple of things. I think one of the main criticisms of your good self, Mike, by people that have approached me and I've spoken to, is that you still, despite the fact that you are a former mayor of the Douglas Shire Council, you also have incredible influence over the Douglas Shire Council right now. What do you say to that?
Well, I'm only a citizen now, and my influence is only by virtue of what I say. And yes, I have some knowledge of the past. I do have some knowledge of environment. I was here for 17 years, and like any other citizen, I have a right to speak up, and I will do so. I'm not standing for council again, as people, there's rumours around that I'm going to do that, absolutely not, but I will continue to speak for the environment. I'm always have and always will, and I reserve the right to do so, and I resent the pressure to shut me up.
Yeah, but what the question was, do you have influence over the council now?
No. Why should I?
Well, I'm just asking the question. This is the, when people talk about Mike Berwick, they always say, oh yes, but he has influence over the present Douglas Shire Council. And I'm just asking your opinion of that statement.
No, my opinion of that statement, it's not correct. I present my views to Douglas Shire Council, like lots of other people do. Sometimes I'd like to think they get noticed, other times they get ignored, and that's the same as any other citizen.
Mm.
I'm no different. I don't see the fact that I'm the previous mayor should preclude me from voicing my opinions. And I voice my opinions. I'm part of an established, long-established sustainability group. Environment has always been very precious to me. This community has absolutely thrived on the environment. The Daintree blockade that we had back in 1983, we were condemned in all the sorts of ways that we're being condemned now by everybody. We were a small minority, but who would want to take away World Heritage listing now? Who would say that all of those environmental gains have not been a benefit to this shire? This shire thrives on the environment, and its future depends on good environmental management, careful environmental management of the reef and the rainforest, and they're both in trouble. The tourism industry here is not doing well this year. The reef is in deep trouble. We need to look after these assets to support our economy, and I'm going to stand up for them.
Yes, but you also, to keep an economy going, you need to attract tourists. And if what you're saying is correct, you don't want any more of these pesky tourists coming.
No, where on earth did you get that idea from?
Hang on, Hang on a second, Michael. I'm expressing my opinion now. Can you just listen to my... I've listened to yours. Now listen to mine. It seems to me that people who are against this bringing of electricity into the Daintree are fearing overdevelopment. And I just think that doesn't fly. And also, you've said to me in a past interview, you've said to me that, more tourists coming in, they don't have the infrastructure there, the roads are not able to take extra tourists. So what I'm saying to you is, with all of this, you can protect something, but you also seem to be not wanting tourists to becoming more tourists, I'm saying, coming into the Daintree.
Absolutely not correct. And at a recent meeting over here at the ferry, the issue is the amount of settlement. The tourists come here with a very low impact. You know, they come on a bus and a car, they drive up the road, they go on a boardwalk, they have a restaurant, they stay overnight. That impact is very light. The impact up here is from settlement, where you get a block of land and a house and a clearing and a road and dogs and cats and noise and all the things that go with that. And that is what's fragmenting this lowland rainforest. And that's the reason why all the experts in the past have said you need to not let settlement reach a point where it's complete settlement, or you'll lose the area's biodiversity and scenic values. That's not me saying that. That's people like Guthridge, Haskins and Davies, conservative engineering companies commissioned by the federal government to look at the impacts of power. So let's separate the impacts of people that live here with those kinds of footprints. There is a lot of capacity for more tourists up here. I have always talked about the need for both conservation and presentation. I'm consistently talking about the need for improved presentation. The tourism industry needs that. The place looks pretty tacky. The conservation controls aren't well implemented. And we need to do all of those things. That study that they did back in 1998 and again in the Daintree Future Study, they're the two substantive studies. There's been other little ones. They're the ones that had a lot of resources thrown at them. That really looked into the big picture and not just the direct implications of power and infrastructure, but all the other indirect long-term implications. They're quite clear about those sorts of things.
Yeah, Mike.
Remember, it was us that fought for the money to build the tourist boardwalks. We've got magnificent boardwalks up here. It was the Greens that did that.
Yeah, but you just mentioned sometimes it looks a bit tacky, and I guess it's too, because there's dwellings up there that are all over the joint. Some of them are humpies. I notice old wrecked cars all around the place. You know, it does need a bit of a clean-up. I agree with you on that one.
Totally. And the ferry entrance
is absolutely
pretty tacky there.
Yep.
When people... We had a big survey years ago with CSIRO looking at visitor attitudes. What visitors want over here is, as far as possible, a pristine environment. They're not going to get that because it's not pristine. But that's what they would like. They get a bit of a shock that in Australia we've even subdivided and sold rainforests. You come from Europe and places like that, America, and they just assume that in a place like Australia that a little place like this is all national park. So they get a shock at that. They get a shock at the real estate signs. They get a shock at the scrappy cars, as you say, and the clearings that they see. And the signage, and those things are all part of the presentation of the area.
Yeah.
You compare the presentation of this place with the Mossman Gorge, which is absolutely smicko, and it doesn't match it. And that is part of the issue of environment. You have to look after the actual substance of it, the biodiversity. This is the world's most ancient forests. Of the entire World Heritage Area, this is one of the most precious parts of it. And the World Heritage Area in Australia was declared as one of the most important natural heritage sites in the world because of its ancient forests that take us back to Gondwana. This is a very precious place environmentally, scientifically, and the scenic beauty is amazing.
It is.
That's what people come here for.
Absolutely.
And we have to absolutely look after those things.
So absolutely.
I have never been against tourism. I've been one of its biggest supporters.
Okay.
Going back to the blockade days, just let's contemplate on this. When we tried to stop the Bloomfield Road and we weren't successful, but we stopped it being a highway, we said tourism is a better use of this place than clearing and farming and alienation. And the locals thought we were completely mad. And so did the southern media. They said the tourists in the north have gone mad. They want tourism, and tourism in those days was the Gold Coast and high-rises on the beach.
Yeah.
Now we said, no, people who want to come and see this place. Now, that blockade was the biggest tourism promotion the Shire has ever seen. It put this place on the map internationally. It was fantastic.
Sure.
And who would ever reverse that?
No, okay. Now, look, we've got a time problem here. Last question, if you could keep it reasonably brief. Part of the argument has been that with this grid and the power comes overdevelopment. You actually brought together, when you were mayor, you actually brought in this town plan that protects the Daintree from that. So I just don't think overdevelopment flies because of your very plan that you put in place.
No. Look at those other two studies. We brought that plan into place because of what those studies had said, and we removed a lot of development rights and compensated people for it. What that plan said is you need to remove about half the development in order to be able to safely say, OK, all these blocks can get settled and the place won't get, its values won't be lost. We are only about two-thirds of the way there. And the studies all show that. So we've got, according to Sunverge, there's 900 blocks. There's 318 occupied and 42 businesses. That leaves a lot of undeveloped land. Imagine what this place is going to look like with two or three times the number of houses on it.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mike Berwick, and as I said, like to get the other side. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Bye. That is Mike Berwick there, former mayor and part of the sustainability group. As I said, that particular study, he's not willing to discuss that, and I can understand that if they want to keep it under wraps at the moment. But the public should know eventually, and he said they're going to put out a newsletter about that meeting that was held yesterday. I hope so, because the public need to be informed, and everything, as far as I'm concerned, needs to be transparent.